I promised my sister Susan Gillies that I would be sure to tell you this morning that any of you who remember her from her days here in Nebraska as the executive minister and her work with all of the churches, including First Baptist Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, she has fond memories of all of you, and she sends her best wishes to you in these days when you are facing yet again another change. Now I can go back home. Not that she would be rude or anything like that, but this morning I am going back to a scripture that has meant a lot for me through the years. I was married twice. The first time was not real helpful, but the second time was tremendous because I was married to an Old Testament professor. And somebody told me at one point that because I had spent 23 years married to Jesse Brown, I almost qualify for ordination. I would never claim that on my own, but I did learn a lot from him. And today I'm going back to one of his favorite scriptures and one that I have liked for a long, long time. Ezekiel 47, verses 1 through 12. Now, Ezekiel can be a rather confusing book, not because it's easy to understand, because it certainly is not, but it contains so much symbolism that is good for us each day of our lives. So Ezekiel is explaining to us a vision that God has given to him. Starting with verse 1, "Then he brought me back to the entrance of the temple. There, water was flowing from below the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east. And the water was flowing down from below the south end of the threshold of the temple, south of the altar. And then the man brought me out of by way of the north gate and led me around to the outside, to the outer gate that faces toward the east. And the water was coming out on the south side. Going on eastward with a cord in his hand, the man measured 1,000 cubits and then led me through the water, and it was ankle deep. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and it was knee deep. And again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and it was up to the waist. Again, he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not cross, for the water had risen. It was deep enough to swim in, a river that could not be crossed. He said this to me, 'Mortal, have you seen this?' Then he led me back along the bank of the river. As I came back, I saw on the bank of the river a great many trees on the one side and on the other. And he said to me, 'This water flows toward the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah. And when it enters the sea of stagnant waters, the water will become fresh. Wherever the river goes, every living creature that swarms will live, and there will be very many fish once these waters reach there. And it will become fresh, and everything will live where the river goes. People will stand fishing beside the sea from En Gedi to Englaim. It will be a place for the spreading of nets. Its fish will be a great many kinds, just like the fish of the great sea. But its swamps and marshes will not become fresh. They are to be left for salt. On the banks on both sides of the river, there will grow all kinds of trees for food. Their leaves will not wither, nor their fruit fall, but they will bear fresh fruit every month, because the water for them flows from the sanctuary. The fruit will be for food, and their leaves will be for healing. The word of the Lord for today. For years, whenever I have wanted to study some of those books of the prophets, it was always kind of a challenge to me to be sure to know how I might come to understand. And so I would go to Jesse, and he would help me define and organize at least part of the book I was studying at the time. Jesse was for many years an Old Testament professor in two different seminaries, and he had studied and even helped with translating some of the Dead Sea Scrolls when he was at Duke. Now, he's not here to walk me through all the bits and pieces of all these different books anymore, so I have to go back to those who have studied and written about Ezekiel so I can continue to learn. And they aren't always the most helpful, just like Ezekiel is always not the most helpful. It appears that some of the confusion about this book actually starts with the person of Ezekiel himself. Did his visions come to him from God when he was in Palestine or in exile in Babylon? Did he write the whole book, or were there other authors of some sections? One school of thought even has Daniel as an author of much of this book. Are the writers in the correct chronological order? That's always a toughie. Always comes back to those who have studied and studied and read and wondered. Jesse agreed that the book could well be in disorder in terms of the years of when different parts of the book were written. So it may be that the order of the chapters in this book we look at today are not in accurate order. Whatever all that means, I have found today's scripture to be full of symbolism that is important to us even today as we continue to build God's church. Most scholars will agree that chapters 40 through 48 were most likely written by Ezekiel around the year 572 BC. And they focus on the visions as given to Ezekiel by God of what the restored community might look like when the Hebrew people would finally return from this exile in Babylon. Ezekiel has spent a lot of time on the descriptions of the temple, the primary spaces, the whole layout with measurements and chambers for specific use, even the weights and measurements for sacrifices. But I find most meaning for today's chapter come from the early chapters of chapter 47, the image of the water flowing from the temple. It's a story that scholars believe is the last of Ezekiel's writing, with the balance of the book having been added at a later time by a different writer. God spoke to Ezekiel and gave him this beautiful picture of what the land would be like, what might be happening, and it was God's description that gave Ezekiel his vision for the future for the Hebrew people once they were able to come back home. It's a beautiful vision, water flowing out from under the doors of the temple, life-giving stream that is watered by the trees, watering to the trees and the plants along the way. But listen again to what's being said here. The man went out 1,000 cubits. That's estimated to be about 1,700 feet, 566 yards, or almost 6 football fields, a measurement with which we are very familiar in this state, at least if you're like me and watch a lot. That's quite a long distance. The water was ankle deep at that point. And another cubits, it was up to knees. and then waist deep, and then finally too deep to be crossed. And as they walked to the riverbank, the trees were growing on both sides of the river. And Ezekiel was told that the waters were flowing down along the Jordan Valley to where it would flow into the Dead Sea. Since there was no way for the water to flow out of the Dead Sea, he was told that this water flowing from the temple would enter the salty water of the Dead Sea and would make that water fresh. And there would be fish in the sea and all kinds of creatures living there. Does that even make sense to us as we try to decide what all this meant? We know that when water starts flowing out like a river, it doesn't always keep getting deeper and deeper. It spreads out, becoming more and more shallow, and finally becoming just a trickle that won't last for very long. But this one, starting from the temple, is going backwards. It continues to increase in size and in depth. It's increasing instead of flowing down. Common sense would tell us that when the water reaches the Dead Sea, it would become salty and the water would not be good for anything. But that was not the vision that God gave to Ezekiel. He saw this water making the salty water of the Dead Sea fresh, just like new. And this water had miraculous qualities. It had healing power. How does that even fit into our thoughts? In some ways, this is showing us how it might be in our lives when the spirit of revival runs like a stream, shallower and further it gets from the actual event. Our energies are at a very high level when a renewing experience comes along, a revival service, perhaps a great musical event. It often seems that after that high point, we start slowing down again. Soon, instead of feeling the breath of God's creative spirit, we are left with an organization that struggles to keep going because our spiritual lives fail to grow wider and deeper. An economist will speak of diminishing returns. And we may feel that, a diminished flow of the water. What Ezekiel is trying to inspire here is the concept that the work of God, once begun with his people, will flow from triumph to triumph. No diminishing return, but overflowing energies and life spirit. I started thinking of what it might have been if Ezekiel's vision was just a little different. In my heart, I found another vision. It is as if the scripture was written like this. The man brought me to the entrance of the temple, and I saw love flowing out from the south side of the altar. And then he brought me out through the north gate and led me around to the outside, to the outer gate facing east, and love was trickling from the south side. As the man went eastward with a measuring line in hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits and led me through love that was rising up to my ankles. Another 1,000 cubits and love was up to my knees. And when we reached that total of 3,000 cubits away from the temple, the love was flowing deep. The next measurement brought us to such a great river of love that I couldn't even see to the other side. And along the banks of that river, the love was creating new life and new energy. And the love brought freshness to the whole area where the troubled, lost, lonely, and hungry would find enough to fulfill their needs, where they could discover and be surrounded by God's love. Love would be renewed as that love continued its flow from the sanctuary into the whole world. And that is the difference that love can make for each one. The love that will start in the sanctuary, it's right here where we come and we are able to refresh and renew ourselves with the love that flows from God. The love that is ours because of the Lord and the gift that He has given to us. As we go out from this place, we are to carry that love with us. It may just be a tiny stream as we leave, but this love coming from the Lord to enrich our lives will continue to grow deeper and wider, as that old camp song says. Deep and wide, there's a water flowing deep and wide. We keep sharing that love with the surrounding world, so it will continue to grow and to spread and give new life to those around us. But it doesn't leave us behind. We are still filled with that increasing love because the love from the Lord grows in our hearts and brings refreshing newness to our lives and the lives of those around us. And it will continue to grow and flow out as long as we keep coming back to the sanctuary to be refreshed and renewed through our worship of the Lord. The center, that source of love and health for the community, is the sanctuary. God's love will grow and flow over any and all barriers as long as we continue to carry it forth. God's love will reach people we might not even think of as lovable, as long as we don't try to keep it bottled up and kept for the future or for different kinds of people. A lesson that God had taught the people a long time ago. When God led the people, those Israelites, out of captivity in Egypt, they were having some problems with Moses. Why did you bring us out here to die in this wilderness? How are we ever going to survive? And God provided enough quail for their meat each evening and manna for their bread each morning. And God made it very plain, don't try to save any of this up for the following day, as I will provide enough for you for each day. This was a trust me moment for the Israelites, and some fail the test by trying to store up more manna just in case God didn't really mean it. The only day they needed more than one day's supply was on the sixth day, and then they had enough for the Sabbath on the seventh day. God's love is enough for all people, but we must never try to keep that love from others for whom God intends it. You see, what God is able to do is to provide each one with enough for the day, whether it be manna or love. We need to remember God's love. Tomorrow will provide enough love for all of the people each day. And this is kind of similar to what happened when Jesus needed to feed the huge crowds gathered to hear him speak. There were more than 5,000 people. Well, actually, there were more than 5,000 men because they didn't count the women and the children. So those five loaves and two fish stretched a lot farther than anybody would ever have anticipated. But all the people, however many that added up to, were all fed, and there was even bread and fish left over. When we trust the Lord, needs are fulfilled. When we trust in the Lord, the love that flows from the sanctuary to our hearts and from our hearts to others outside these walls, there is more than enough love to touch the hearts of all people everywhere. Picture the flowing stream of love in your own mind. Is it bringing new life? Or is it making a difference in the lives of those who simply find that river of love? As our stream of spiritual love deepens today, are we ready to move from triumph to triumph? And just like God's work in the world flows deeper and wider and reaches further, are you carrying the love of God out of this sacred place into the world? Are you answering God's call to love all people?